The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now on to more serious matters. While protests rage in colleges across the United States and thousands have been arrested, the prospect of a ceasefire that might bring those protests to a close is still there, but perhaps getting more remote. I'm joined here in the Shelbourne by Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, good morning and welcome.
Hey, morning to you, Pat, and morning to all these great folks here at the Shelbourne.
Well, thank you for coming into the Shelbourne. And let's talk about the protests in the United States. This is reminiscent of the Vietnam protests, although so far short-lived.
So far, but that's going to depend on how long this war and the mass killing goes on in Gaza. I think they're two very different cases. You know, Vietnam, specific instance, specific area of the world. Israel, Gaza, specific instances, including Hamas's mass killing, as well as the Israelis.
But in Vietnam, we had the body bags coming home. And what was that thing about if you went over as a young lieutenant to serve in Vietnam, your odds of dying were hugely high in the first 6 weeks of your tour.
Absolutely right, and especially hugely high, of course, Pat, for minorities who went over there. I think the difference in the early phase of this conflict had been that the Americans are not directly involved in Israel and Gaza. But that's what has kind of caught, I think, the Biden administration and others by surprise, that even though Americans aren't directly involved, we have seen in the past couple of months this rapid spread across university campuses who are saying, look, this is a matter of concern to us, even if Americans are not directly involved in the war.
And the question of the protests and whether there are agents provocateurs from outside coming in, I heard a right-wing commentator on The Hard Shoulder suggesting that the bulk of the people now who are protesting are actually coming there deliberately to foment trouble, and that many of the earlier protesters who are protesting about the disproportionate response by Israel in Gaza, that they have melted away. That can't be utterly...
No, that's not accurate. It's really important to keep to the facts, Pat, because all sides are trying to spin this. The majority of people who are in these protests are students on the campuses. Now, there are some people from communities, not agents provocateurs, but quite often activists, who do join the protest. There's no evidence that there's like this evil extreme left minority manipulating them. But, of course, if you don't like the protest, you're going to try to frame them as not being decent, not being
legitimate. But there were those calling for multiple October the 7ths.
Yeah, but there have been individual cases, Pat, and those people should be condemned, and quite rightly so. But that, of course, happens with all protests, that you get the individual cases, the few who are highlighted, to try to denigrate the majority. Yeah.
Now, Joe Biden is in a difficult situation because he has the right, I suppose, and even the Republican Party more generally. Mitch McConnell, saw him on Meet the Press there talking about, you know, this is anti-Semitic and it's got to be put down, that sort of thing. Joe Biden, when he gave a press conference yesterday, he said that the rule of law must be upheld, but stressed that violent protest is not protected by the rule of law. Vandalism, trespassing, breaking windows, shutting down campuses, forcing the cancellation of classes and graduation, none of this is peaceful protest. Threatening people, intimidating people, instilling fear in people is not a peaceful protest. He said, dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education. There's a right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos.
At the risk of being provocative, I wish the president had started by saying that the rule of law was really important to be upheld in Gaza. But to speak about the United States, the vast majority of the protests, Pat, have been peaceful. Where they crossed a line, I think, with some universities is when they set up tents. So the idea that these protests weren't going to melt away, but they would be indefinite. That's when pressure was beginning to be put on the leaderships to crack down. And to give you one specific case, if we want to talk about order and rule of law, at the start of this week, the violence was coming not from students at the University of California in Los Angeles. It was a group of people that were throwing missiles, fireworks on those students and actually tried to go in and beat up people in the encampment. 24 hours later, the Los Angeles police went in not to deal with those counter-protesters that were causing the violence. They went in to break up the camps and to arrest students. I think it is always good to talk about protest must be peaceful. It must be respectful, but to try to stigmatize the protest with the word order, it's a diversion from the key issues both in Gaza and in the United States.
Now, some college presidents have managed to kind of negotiate a settlement. Explain.
I think it's really, really important because the headlines, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, is going to be on the conflict cases. In at least three universities, Brown University in Rhode Island, Rutgers in New Jersey, and in a third state university, they have reached settlements which say, okay, break down the tents, break down the encampments, and in return, we're going to talk to you about divesting from Israel, and especially from the Israeli military, which is a key, you know, basically demand of many of these protests.
So would that mean that any company that was endowing the university but which is involved in arms production, which might ultimately go to Israel, or chip production, or whatever it might be, that they would divest from those?
Yeah, you cut ties.
At some cost to the university.
It's at some cost to the university, but we get to the broader issue, which is fundamental. One of the reasons why the Israelis have had political space as we go into the eighth month of this conflict, this mass killing, is because the U.S. government has not limited military aid to the Israelis. It's increased it. And so you sort of highlight that issue by going to the individual universities and say, if the government's not going to be responsible here, you should be, because there's a moral and ethical reason here.
Now, why did the peace talks, the latest round, not lead us anywhere? I mean, we hear this morning reports that Hamas are looking at the offer, the generous offer, according to Blinken, from Israel, that they're looking at it negatively.
Because there's a fundamental, Pat. Every time we go into a round of talks, everybody talks it up. But the fundamental remains that Hamas is calling for an unconditional withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza.
Now, it's not going to happen.
Because Benjamin Netanyahu has not only said, I'm not going to withdraw troops from Gaza, he's saying, I'm not going to stop until Hamas is destroyed. Now, there's no way in between that. So what the Americans do is they talk on the fringes. They say, okay, Israel can have normalization with Arab countries. We can talk about a Palestinian state. But they never get to the core issue of you've got to get a resolution in Gaza itself. And if I could add one thing very quickly, the most interesting development that I think a lot of the media haven't picked up yet has come out of Saudi Arabia. Because when Blinken went to Saudi Arabia, and the Americans have been hoping that Saudi Arabia and Israel would reach this deal of normalization, the Saudis said, look, we'll give you a deal, but we want three conditions. One is, you withdraw the Israeli troops from Gaza, you halt the expansion of Israeli settlements in the West Bank, and you commit to negotiations for a Palestinian state within 3 to 5 years. So the Saudis are actually trying to step up and say, you want to deal with us in the region? We're going to put pressure on the Israelis.
Again, Israel, under its current leadership, is not going to accept
but
that.
But does that current leadership continue? What the Americans had also been trying to do is to go to the other two members of the war cabinet, who's the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, and the former head of the military, Benny Gantz, and say, look, you really need to accept that this open-ended war, how long can you go on for this? Yoav Gallant's quite hawkish. They haven't really shifted him. But Benny Gantz had said it back in October, he had warned that of a war without an end game, where would it stop? If Gantz was to come to power in Israel, in other words, if there were to be elections in Israel, then the dynamic shifts.
What about if Trump were to come to power in the United States? And we'll talk about his extraordinary interview with Time magazine in a moment. But what is his stance on Israel? I mean, he would have characterized himself as a pal of Benjamin Netanyahu.
If Trump gets power in the United States, I'm going to go to the bunker for a number of reasons. But in terms of Israel, Trump never speaks coherently, therefore he's had very little to say of substance about the Israel-Gaza statements. But what he's done is he's tried to capitalize on the Biden administration's weakness by saying, I support the police in going into the campuses and beating up students. And by the way, if I was to be president, I'd sell everything immediately, which means it's just a little bit of chatter from the sidelines. Because to be honest with you, Trump's main preoccupation right now is trying to get through the first of the multiple trials.
Trump is a one-man party in the sense that what he says appears to go with the Republicans irrespective. And I saw an extraordinary thing that the delegates being selected by the Republicans in Arizona, where they had that abortion vote, these are two wacky people.
He's got loads of wacky people. But the Republican Party is not completely behind Trump. It's more to illustrate it, since you were talking about the conservatives in the UK earlier, as being fractured. There are a lot of Trumpists out there, but let me give you two points which illustrate this. Even in Arizona, with all the Trumpists out there, they finally have overturned the bill from 1864 banning all abortions. So they drew a line with the Trumpists there. Perhaps more significantly, to get back to Israel and Gaza, most Republicans in the House wanted to pass a bill saying any protest which is considered anti-Semitic, which may include criticism of Israel, we're going to ban that. Some of the Trumpists, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, came out and opposed this bill and said it's awful because in their reading of it, it could ban parts of the Bible, which shows you that it's not as much a unified party as one that isn't exactly, well, not speaking from the same script. I'm not sure what the script is anymore.
Finally, then, Trump's exposition of how he would behave if he became, and as he says, when he becomes a president, a couple of key things. One, he said he was only joking about being a dictator for a day. He probably meant for 4 years rather than a day. But he's going to fire civil servants and replace them with political appointees. And he will only abide by the result of the election if the elections are deemed by him to be fair.
Yeah, just like Trump was joking when he asked the Russians to get Hillary Clinton's emails. The fact is, you deal with Trump when he says something that rings of what he intends to do. And on day one, Donald Trump runs the presidency not for the U.S. government, he runs it for himself. And what does that mean is, if he's elected, he settles scores. He will go after those he considers his political opponents. He will put his own people at the head of agencies and purge those agencies. He will, in other words, try to turn the American government into an autocracy. And we need to be very clear about that.
Is there any resistance? What happens to senior civil servants, for example, who are told your job is gone? Can they hire and fire at will?
There's going to be a lot of resistance from agencies who held out against Trump for 4 years during his first term. Trump tried to bring this measure in the last months of his administration, and already legal action was threatened against it. The election occurred before we could test that. I don't think he could push that through without a lot of resistance.
Is there any prospect that Joe Biden, faced with all of these protests and falling polls, could ever fall on his sword?
No. I'm going to break this into two
parts. He's a given.
I'm going to break it into two parts. First of all, you dance with who brung you. So Biden's going to run in what is a toss-up election. But secondly, to link the election back to Israel and Gaza, the red line for Biden and the administration is if Benjamin Netanyahu decides to invade Rafah, where 1.5 million Gazans are trying to shelter. If he does that, the Biden administration may finally break with Netanyahu in the war cabinet.
Scott Lucas, thank you very much for joining us. Scott is professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College at Dublin.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.